This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. He's been in the zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over. Right? It is over. The Cubs, a World Series champion. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars, infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coom Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woohoo!
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Ron Coomer. And he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Good morning, Ron. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Mikey, David, how are you boys doing?
Doing okay.
We're holding up, and you're out in Arizona. You're getting ready. You got games on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, all at 2:55. And they'll be here on The Score, you and Zach, doing the games. It's so weird to be coming back from the games in Japan and then playing some more spring training games before beginning in earnest on Thursday.
Yep, I would agree. I don't know what to do. It's kind of odd. And today, so I'm headed to the ballpark here when we get off the air in a couple hours and just for the workout. But today, we're playing today. Now, I would assume, and, you know, this is an educated guess, that you won't see the Cubs starting lineup playing today at Sloan Park. I hate to disappoint everybody, but everybody coming off the road, I would assume, would not play today, or most guys. Got to get some rest. And then maybe play one game. If you're an everyday player, play one game this weekend and try to get yourself back on track. Very odd situation. I would be very conscious of how guys are feeling in these next 3 days before you get the season started next week.
Well, it's unprecedented, so there's nothing to rely on for previous experience. Mm-hmm. So I think we're all kind of curious about how this will affect the progress or the typical rhythm of a spring training, because this interrupts that, Coom. So I just wonder, what would you do if you're a player? If you're a guy who is, everybody loves to get into routines and rituals and protocol. If you're a Cub regular, say Dansby Swanson, maybe Ian Happ, a guy who's an everyday player,
yep.
Do you start over? Do you come back and try to fight through? What's the best approach, you think?
I've said this. If this were me, I'm not speaking for them, but if it were me and I was a veteran player, an everyday player on this team, I would come back, I would talk with the manager, and I would say, I will come out the next 3 days, I'll take my batting practice, I'll run around, take my ground balls, play a little catch, keep my arm in shape, And then after a couple hours, I'm going home. And I'd like to go home, and I'd like to sleep, and I would like to do that again the next day. And then maybe on Monday or so, I would like to play a game again and then just open up the season. You've played enough baseball, so your skills are honed to the point where that's what they're going to be going into the season, the regular season. But I think it's more important to get back on your normal schedule of life and sleep schedule than it is playing a spring training game. So I would be going home as early as possible from the ballpark, and I would be trying to get as much rest and sleep and try to get myself back on track as I could.
So, Ron, we saw a couple of roster moves. The Cubs option Jordan Wicks and Eli Morgan to AAA. That really has as much to do with the fact that they have options left as anything else. With Wicks, anyway, I'm just curious. You know, they don't have a lot of bullpen, left-handed bullpen help. I would imagine he will be back. I would imagine that this is kind of one of these ongoing situations as you kind of go through players, et cetera. Were you surprised that those moves were made, or do you understand they still have cuts to make?
No, I wasn't surprised. I didn't know about Morgan, but I did know for Wicks that the decision, whoever that was, and I don't know about Wicks, but the decision to send somebody to the minor leagues, and he's the young guy, so, you know, it's right. Kind of on him, I guess. But you want to keep those guys stretched out. You can't send them to the bullpen, Mike, and think, okay, we're going to do that. And then 3 weeks later, we need a spot starter. We need to start because a guy breaks down and he's going to be out for a month. And now you think you've got a starter because you've got a bullpen guy now. And what that does is it goes back to looking at Caleb Thielbar as a veteran lefty that you signed this winter and says, you know, to me, you're looking at a guy that you can trust. He's got good stuff, and that's going to be our lefty coming out of the pen.
So, Ron, when you look back at all that happened in the two games in Japan and you realize that the guy who didn't really get – a chance to go to the plate was the guy who was your best hitter in spring training, Gage Workman. What does that, if anything, say about the Cubs' belief that he will be part of this roster? And knowing the implications of that because of the Rule 5 rules, how do you think that they'll handle the situation?
I'm not sure. You still got days left before you got to come up with your final roster, David. So I think that situation is still to be determined. Mm. He went to Japan, so you know that they feel very strongly about him. To me, if I were the manager, I'd keep him. But, you know, you got other factors in play. He's had a great spring, but that final decision, that final roster spot is still to be determined. But, man, that kid has had a great spring. He really hasn't. He's checked every box for me. When he was playing the middle infield and he turned a double play before the team went to Japan on a close pivot at second base. So it wasn't just a routine pivot. It was a close pivot at second. He gets the double play, and that was as smooth as could be. I went, wow, that's a 6'3", 220-pound guy that can run. That's making a pivot at second and second baseman. You know he can hit. He can steal bases. Now he can play the middle diamond. Middle of the diamond, he checks all the boxes for me.
And, you know, two things about the roster and what's left. Nico presumably is going to be added to the roster, so that means someone's going to have to go. And I'm not saying it's Gage Workman, but there right. will be someone that is leaving the roster. We know that. And then the other thing is with Brad Keller, it's my understanding he has an out option if he doesn't make the major league ball club. So you could bring him back, but you'd need a 40-man spot. That would mean that you would have to make a move, and it would probably be Ben Brown back to Iowa, where you could leave him stretched out, et cetera. But I just don't know how complicated those final two moves on the roster are, one with a position player and one with a pitcher.
Yeah, the pitcher one, I would think you're really trying to figure out who, you know, if you want to keep a guy,
yeah,
how do you keep him, right? And then figure out that 26th man It's a difficult decision. Ben Brown brings something to the table. Like, he threw three innings in that game, 2 2/3. And, you know, that's the first time he's pitched since all this injury stuff with his neck and things, Mike. So that shows me that they get a lot of confidence in that guy to pitch extended innings. I would think you're probably leaning towards keeping Ben Brown. And his stuff, I can understand why. You know, the other issue that the Cubs have right now is with that final roster spot, if you have a day or two or three days where Pete Armstrong tweaks something, who plays center field?
That's a good question.
That's the other big question.
That's a big one.
Ron, you know,
right? So
yeah, you go ahead, finish that thought, because I think
please do. Go ahead, David.
No, you mentioned PCA. He was having a great spring. You look at the Cubs overall before they headed to Japan. It was a good spring. There were good things happening. I just wonder, you know, the people that watch those games and frustrated at the 0-2 start and not hitting with runners in scoring position and being drawn back to last year. And they were tough games to watch. You got up early and you were kind of disappointed. Does that really trump anything else that happened up to that point in spring training? How do you balance those two competing forces? The optimism that comes with spring training, the Cubs were looking good, with the disappointment of them returning from Japan 0-2.
Well, you're playing the best team in baseball for the last few years, maybe last 10 years. So they've got this understanding with their roster of how to win and how to do things, little things right to help you win, especially on offense. And the Cubs, to be honest, they didn't play clean baseball. So that's why they lost. You know, you have walks to the number 9 hitter in front of Ohtani multiple times. You can't have that. That's not going to work. You have some mistakes being made on defense. When you're playing the best team in baseball, you can't make those mistakes. The Cubs did. The Dodgers really didn't, and they won. The Cubs have had a great spring. I really believe that, and they're a very good team. So you played the best team, and a couple plays cost you both games.
This is not going to be a popular question, Ron. Just prepare yourself. So the Cubs trade Cam Smith for Kyle Tucker. They trade three players, and one of them is their prospect, Cam Smith. And he is killing the ball in Houston. They're talking about starting the season with him as their right fielder. They've moved him to the outfield. He's just hitting everything. And so he's like winning the Grapefruit League by himself. You know, they're talking about Rookie of the Year stuff, et cetera. And you see him hit, and he's got this unbelievably, like, the noise of the bat is incredible. And he's got this sweet swing. And then you look at Matt Shaw, and I don't know how to ask this question correctly, but he has about as unorthodox a way of swinging as I may have seen. He's kind of on the top of one toe, and he's turned his rear end one way, and then he kind of makes some contact, but the foot sometimes lands on the side. It's just a very strange swing. Generally speaking, would you prefer a guy that could swing, and I'm going to use the term normally for lack of a better term.
Right.
But like
more
kind
orthodox,
of with
right?
the, yeah. yeah, more orthodox, more of a, because I know this is not connected, but I think of Paul Edinger was the kicker for the Bears, who did this little corkscrew thing, and no one else ever did it. And I remember talking to the special teams coordinator when this guy went off the boil, they didn't know how to fix him because they'd never seen anyone that had that style. Does the same thing come into play when you're talking about a hitter? When someone has an unconventional style, is it harder to fix that than a free-swinging guy?
I would think, in general terms, I would say yes, Mike. I would say with Shaw, I would say no. As a hitting guy and somebody who has talked about hitting and been with, you know, people that have been great hitters and great hitting coaches since, you know, I was 20 years old in the minor leagues, he's unorthodox, but it's not something that's over the top. He pigeon toes his front toe in to keep his front side closed. That's just a trigger for him. So So that, even though it looks kind of strange, if you went back to 1975, that wouldn't be all that strange. You know, you had a lot of guys, the George Hendricks, and a lot of guys who hit with a real closed stance. So that part is okay to me. The hovering of his foot when his foot comes up, a lot of guys have hit with a leg kick. You know, and the guy that I always try to tell people about, if you want to watch a great leg kick hitter, was Harold Baines. Harold kicked that leg up, hands went down, hands went back up. The key is getting your foot back down, the front foot back down on the ground early, so then you can recognize the pitch. So even though he looks a little unorthodox and he's closed, it's not as crazy as you might think. And there's just certain keys. Getting his front foot down will always be something that he's got to be concerned about. Getting the foot down before you recognize the pitch and you start to attack the baseball, that's going to be a huge key for him, like it is just about every hitter. So I would say for Shaw, it's not that big a concern for me as a hitting guy. I look at it and go, well, yeah, it looks a little different, but still the same issues that all hitters have.
Okay, now do say Suzuki, Coom, because did not like what I saw the first two games. What's wrong? What's going on? He'll be fine?
Hold on, can I get some more coffee after
I'm sorry, Coom. This is tough. It's been a long week, man. It's been a long week.
But how was the Kansas in Kansas and Arkansas game? I watched that yesterday. No. Suzuki's fine. I watched him all spring. He's fine. You know, the biggest thing for him is he's gotta stay on the pitch away. They're gonna pound him away and force him to hit that ball away because he's so strong on the ball inside that he's gonna have to hit the slider away. They're gonna pitch him in and, you know, pitch him inside for show and go outside to try to get him out. And that's just the facts. That's what they're going to do. And until he hits that ball away regularly to right center or is able to do damage to the middle of the field, which, you know, big power hitters can do, where they can cover that outside corner and drive it to the middle of the field, he's going to have to show that. That's just the way it is. And when they make a mistake inside, he's going to make them pay. But right now, the Dodgers did a good job of pitching him in off the plate and then staying away from him. And he's got to make that adjustment.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it was frustrating because the 2, 3, 4 hitters, you know, everything that you saw out of that, it was just not good enough. And I think that, you know, you came away from that series. Again, they're playing a great team, great pitchers, but they didn't score enough runs, and they didn't hit with runners in scoring position, and it was almost like a continuation of some of the issues we saw last year.
I would agree. I don't disagree. That's what you saw. It's the one thing we did not see this spring all that much. You saw it a little bit, but not nearly as much. You got a lot of big hits. The other thing about spring training that you got to remember, too, is the Cubs have won a lot of games, but a lot of the games are won. The young kids really played well. Yes. So you're really expecting them to do Pete Armstrong had a huge spring. So some of the young guys that you're counting on, Michael Bush, all these guys, they're going to have to perform now that the lights go on. And, you know, I expect them to be honest with you. I really do. And I think Shaw, until he shows he can't hit in the big leagues, you got to leave him alone and let him hit. He's hit everywhere he's ever been. I don't feel like all of a sudden now this style thing is going to change and it's not going to work. I think he's going to hit in the big leagues also. I really do.
All right, Coom, I want to finish on
the young guys got to do well.
I want to finish on a positive, though, so we can agree on two things. Number one, Matt Shaw's base hit was not a single. It was an error. I think, as you point out, you have the gloves for a reason. You need to make that play. And number two, Ohtani's home run was a double. It was not a home run. It did not go out of the park.
Are we trying? First series? We're butchering it up already.
I know.
We didn't even get out of the first two games, and we get two decisions, got them both wrong. Come on, Major League Baseball. Let's get a one-hopper to the pitcher. That was like Olivia. The 12-year-old kids, if I go to Clarence Little League in Chicago, my old Little League, we make that play.
Yep.
I'd be mad if I didn't make that play at 12. I mean, come on. What are we – for poor Matt Shaw, do you want that for your rest of your baseball life? To be known as your first hit, throw it back like a fish. Throw it back. Now let's try again.
I agree.
Don't bring up fishing. All right, Coom. Thank you, buddy. Great stuff.
See you, Coom. Have a great weekend.
You too, boys. Yep. Take care.
Oh, you're the best. That's Ron Coomer. Always fun. 312-644-6767. We got Mike Florio next. We get a chance
Wait,
to
it's
talk.
Friday.
It's Friday, and we got Mike Florio
Friday
next.
Friday football?
Friday football.
All right.
We're going to be able to close off the weekend with some expectation about what's going to happen with the NFL players.
It has been kind
brackets.
Of a messed up week, so this is a very appropriate finish
yes,
to it.
There you go. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We can't beat beat!
We can't beat beat!
Won't beat beat!
What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up?
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to the great Mike Florio. And he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? It's Friday, which is always a great day, even though every day is Friday for me because I don't really have a job.
But I would imagine you're still embittered about the tournament with West Virginia getting slighted and being kept out of the field.
And then losing their coach.
It would be very easy for me to say that in protest of West Virginia being omitted from the field, I vow to watch no games whatsoever of the tournament this year. But I wasn't going to watch any anyway. I probably would have guilt-watched West Virginia if they'd made it. It actually saved me 2 hours of my life because they would have lost, and then we'd be in the same spot we're in anyway. So, yeah, I used to be a huge basketball fan. I started off as a huge baseball fan. As I've spent more and more time focused only on football, I don't have any interest in any other sports at this point in my life. And it's sad, but it's true.
Your indifference will probably prevent West Virginia from looking much further into why they lost their coach and how they lost him.
That's true. That's true. But you know why? You know why and how? Because of money.
Yeah.
And it's all driven by money. At least the players are finally getting some of that money. And they're the ones who get to jump from team to team willy-nilly. I used to get so mad when they would preach loyalty from the players as the coaches hopscotched around the entire industry, always looking for the better and better job that's out there. So at least the players now have that same power.
All right, Mike. So the Bears, they lost Tevin Jenkins, the guard signed with the Cleveland Browns. When he went and visited Seattle and they didn't sign him, knowing how Seattle needs offensive linemen, I didn't think it was going to be a great offseason for Tevin Jenkins. And the very fact that no details of his contract have been leaked would indicate to me that he signed with Cleveland. He didn't really get paid much for Cleveland.
There's a 24-hour rule as it relates to the reporting on new contracts. And basically, if the details aren't leaked in the first 24 hours, they're not worth bragging about, and there's no way to even package them as anything positive. And we're in that phase of free agency now. 10 days, 9 days, 11 days, depending upon when it actually started. Guys are taking whatever they can get, and it's usually a shorter-term deal that allows them another bite at the apple next year. The one difference this year, there seem to be a lot of guys taking one-year deals right away instead of letting it all play out, jumping on that one-year deal like Hassan Reddick did with the Buccaneers. But a lot of examples like that, usually those deals come later. They flooded the market early. The short term, I'll take what I can get and I'll try it again next year. That's what a lot of guys end up doing in free agency when they don't get the kind of financial offer they thought they were going to get when they finally hit the market.
Mike, I have to say, one of the more intriguing statistics I saw this week, I did not expect to read, but there were like 490 fewer plays from scrimmage run last season than in the previous year. And I wonder, is that related to teams ran the ball more effectively than they had maybe in some time? Is it because the clock is inconsistently, you know, they don't stop it in certain times in the last 2 minutes of halves and games? How do you explain what that means?
The easiest is that rushing was up nearly 4,000 yards league wide. So the more running plays you have, the more plays where the clock keeps running from the moment the guy hits the ground. Incomplete pass, obviously it stops. And with plays out of bounds, I remember when I first discovered football 50 years ago, if it went out of bounds, the clock stopped and it stayed stopped until it was time to start the next play. They got away from that in their effort to shrink games into a three-hour package. So now the clock runs again once the official does the windmill rewind, start the clock deal. And one thing that's been noticed is there is a gross inconsistency on how much time elapses before they crank the clock again. And the sooner they start the clock, the more time elapses before the next snap. It's closer and closer to simulating a running play that lands inbounds if there's a play that lands out of bounds, whether it's a catch or a run. So that's part of it too. And this is all out there as part of the justification for the proposal by the Eagles that I think has a lot of support to have the regular season overtime rules match the postseason and to expand the regular season overtime to 15 minutes from 10. So both teams are guaranteed a possession. So you'll have extra snaps. And the Eagles believe, I'm told, it'll be 30 total snaps per year. If a team scores a touchdown on the opening drive of overtime, the other team gets an opportunity to match it. It's not going to happen often. And like I said, the Eagles believe it's going to work out to 30 extra league-wide scrimmage plays per year.
Interesting, Mike. Do you like any of the other rules that are being proposed? We've heard, I think, the intriguing one from the perspective here in the Midwest might be the idea that the Detroit Lions are talking about kind of erasing anything other than wins and losses when it comes to seeding the playoffs.
And the Lions have a couple of proposals. They've proposed getting rid of the automatic first down for defensive holding or illegal contact, which I think is a mistake because it will create unintended consequences. There will be more defensive holding and illegal contact if you take away that deterrence.
Right.
And then there'll be a lot of those fouls that just aren't called because the officials aren't going to throw a flag every time it happens. It basically overpowers the system like the Seahawks did in 2013. Just do it all the time. They're not going to flag it all the time, and you can get away with it. I think that's what would happen if you take away the automatic first down. As it relates to the playoff seeding, it minimizes the value of winning a division. And I think if you would ever go down this path of saying you determine your seven playoff teams in the usual way, but then you seed them without regard to division champion, I think they would need to reconfigure the scheduling formula so there would be more conference games. I think there needs to be more games played among the teams that are actually jockeying for position on that playoff tree if we're going to make record the only thing that determines where your spot is on that tree, or at least there's a dividing line between winning a division and not. So I think it leads to a broader conversation that I believe needs to be had. The NFL has a scheduling formula that is driven by variety. They want every team to be guaranteed to play every other team every 4 years. They want every fan to be able to see every team in the NFL once every 8 years. I think it creates inequities in this rotation. And some seasons you'll have a division that gets a great draw as it relates to the teams from other divisions that'll be playing that year, like the NFC North did last year. They got a great draw with the AFC South and the NFC West, which was down last year. This year, the NFC West gets the AFC South and the NFC South. I don't like that part of it. If you're going to say, we're going to compare all these teams from the same conference, why not play every team in the conference? It's a better indicator of who the best team in the conference is if 15 of your games are against the other teams in your conference, if what the Lions have proposed comes to fruition.
Mike, now it's being reported or speculated that Aaron Rodgers is just on pause. He's really just on pause, and the offseason is just kind of waiting for him to make up his mind. Vikings seem to be moving on, maybe, probably. But what happens with the Giants and the Steelers? Russell Wilson is being held up. Joe Flacco being held up. What's going on in the world of Aaron Rodgers?
It's been a crazy month because 4 weeks ago, Aaron Rodgers was teetering on the edge of irrelevance to the point where during Combine Week, one of the most intriguing stories I heard other than the insider confrontation at the Starbucks at the JW Marriott was that Rodgers had reached out to the Giants. And if you reach out to the Giants, you really got nothing going on because you're looking for a contender. Everybody knows the Giants aren't that right now. But then came the Steelers when it was clear they were lowballing Justin Fields to the point where he was going to go to the Jets. And as it looked like the Steelers and Rodgers might do something, then came the Vikings with Sam Darnold leaving, with Daniel Jones leaving, with Nick Mullins leaving, no veteran quarterback, and this lingering sense that maybe the Vikings are willing to go in a different direction from J.J. McCarthy. And I think the end result is this. The Vikings are going to let McCarthy prove himself or not in the offseason program. And Rodgers is just going to lurk. And the presence of Rodgers is the stick on, carrot and stick. It's the stick on McCarthy to get him to do what needs to be done, to check the boxes so they believe they can trust him with that job. I think Rodgers is betting the under on McCarthy. I think that's the real story here. I think Rodgers thinks that when the offseason program hay is in the barn, to consider the continue the agricultural metaphors, I think that Rodgers believes the Vikings are going to say, wait a minute. We got a guy that's never played, and that we're still not 100% sure he's the guy. And we have this other guy who every time he throws the football, it makes a sound we've never heard before. Maybe we should go with that guy for a year. Now, I don't support it, and I'm reserving the right to renounce my Vikings affinity that goes back to 1973. Fly, Eagles, fly may be my chant for 2025. Wow. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
But wow. I think they might circle back to Aaron Rodgers.
Wow, that would be something.
And remember, they didn't sign Brett Favre until August 18 of 2009.
I did not realize that.
No, I didn't.
Nor did I remember it. That's be a fascinating offseason for J.J. McCarthy to have that possibility hovering over everything he does.
Remember when they were going to sign Favre? I'm sorry to interrupt. Remember, I've had extra coffee today. They said there was a schism in Minnesota between the guys who were behind Tavares Jackson and the guys who were behind Brett Favre. I don't know why that made the confetti fall. But the schism lasted until Brett Favre set foot on the practice field and threw one pass. Schism over.
Pants on the ground. Great stuff, Mike. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
That is Mike Florio.
That would be wild.
I remember the pants on the ground thing as much as anything with Favre in Minnesota.
Know.
Remember, there was some goofy song?
I do remember now. That's interesting. That would be unfortunate for J.J. McCarthy. If you're going to commit to him, commit to him. If you're going to commit to him, go out and get a backup quarterback that doesn't feel like it's a threat to his consistency. Go sign Joe Flacco. Go get somebody like that. If you're moving on from Aaron Rodgers, move on. If you're not trusting J.J. McCarthy, do it now. Show it now. Waiting until training camp after the offseason portion of the stuff, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I don't think it sounds like Kevin O'Connell either.
No, it doesn't. But it'll be curious to see what they do because they have kind of left their – they're playing their cards tight to the vest and they've left their options open. We should let you know the transitions on 670 The Score are brought to you by Webb Hyundai in Highland or Merrillville, Indiana. Get the vehicle you deserve at the payment you want at Webb Hyundai. We will be right back with our colleagues, Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris. We'll talk to them next. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Pants on the ground! Pants on the ground!